Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about the Equality Act. Our article is by Alexandra DeSanctis from the National Review Online and is entitled, "The Equality Act Would Require Government-Funded Abortion." The House is slated to vote today on the Equality Act, which, far from being about any new or necessary form of equality, would in fact impose on the entire country the left's revisionist view of sex, gender, and human nature. The law amends the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to add sexual orientation and gender identity as classes protected by non-discrimination statutes. Under the Equality Act, anyone who dissents from the progressive desire to erase the biological realities of manhood and womanhood would, as Ryan Anderson puts it, be treated as the legal equivalent of Bull Connor. And many conservatives, indeed many liberals, have noted the law's provisions would undoubtedly lead to an erasure of women's rights. If passed, the legislation would put women at risk by granting biological men who identify as women access to female-only spaces, including shelters for battered women, locker rooms, dressing rooms, dorm rooms, and restrooms. The bill would also require sports teams to let such men participate in women's only sports leagues, putting female competitors at a clear disadvantage. But the Equality Act is more insidious still. In addition to rendering male-female distinctions essentially null for the purposes of law, it would smuggle in a redefinition of discrimination that would make it impossible for individuals and institutions to decline to perform or pay for an abortion. Under the Equality Act, healthcare professionals would be required by law to perform sex reassignment procedures or offer related hormone treatment, even if such procedures contradicted their own best medical judgment. So too, the law would treat refusals to perform an abortion as pregnancy discrimination, which would be treated as an illegal form of discrimination on the basis of sex. The Equality Act defines sex to include pregnancy, childbirth, and related medical condition. And, as the bill's opponents have noted, federal agencies and courts already have determined that the phrases related medical condition can be interpreted to include abortion. The bill's text also stipulates that those with a related medical condition shall not receive less favorable treatment than other physical conditions, which would, in effect, make it illegal for physicians to decline to perform an abortion. The legislation, therefore, would enable women who are denied an abortion, even as a result of a healthcare worker's religious or conscience objections, to challenge the decision under the law, and most likely, they would be legally successful. Similarly, as advocates of the Equality Act have openly admitted, those same provisions could be read to require taxpayer funding of elective abortions. Such funding is currently prohibited by the Hyde Amendment, typically attached to federal spending bills to prohibit direct reimbursement for abortion procedures. But because the federal government funds a wide range of healthcare programs, and because the bill defines establishments broadly to include institutions other than actual healthcare facilities, the government itself likely would be subject to the terms of the Equality Act. As a result, the law would almost certainly require the government to cover the cost of abortion procedures. State governments, too, would be subject to this reading of the law. Because states receive federal funds to underwrite their healthcare programs, the Equality Act could require them to cover the cost of elective abortions with that funding. What's more, the Equality Act exempts itself from long-standing federal protections for religious freedom. The bill explicitly states that the law is not subject to the protections of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, giving those who object either to abortion or a sex reassignment procedure no means of defending their religious liberty or conscience rights. As a result, the Equality Act would obliterate our nation's longtime bipartisan commitment to conscience protections and compel every American to participate in the left's radical effort to redefine gender and expand unlimited legal abortion. Well, in case you didn't hear, because frankly, who can keep up with all the nightmarish and horrifyingly stupid and evil legislation and policies and legal decisions coming from the great swamp somewhere in Maryland, Virginia? Don't worry, it'll soon become a state. The Equality Act passed the House. First and foremost, the name Equality Act is a bit of Orwellian newspeak, the likes of which are becoming increasingly common in today's public discourse, because as Dan Crenshaw points out, this bill is in no way about equality. Now, I've read the whole thing, the whole bill, and most of it I've read three or four times, and you can read it too, and you should. Read it for yourself. Seriously, read what the people you send to Washington do with their time and the money they're printing on the promise that your children and grandchildren will pay it off. Now, as has been pointed out by many, there are some enormous problems with this bill. First, the basis of the bill is the discrimination that homosexuals and transsexuals experience. Note that they don't define what discrimination is. Moreover, they make grandiose claims that transgender people experience housing discrimination because 1 in 5 transgender people experience homelessness in their lives. The bill simply presumes that there are no other mitigating factors, like, you know, having a mental illness, that might have something to do with experiencing higher than normal rates of homelessness and having lower than normal rates of home ownership. Actually, another very funny piece of insanity is found in Section 2A2, where it states that transgender people have trouble getting housed in shelters. Presumably women's shelters, because, yeah, women's shelters don't take in men. Particularly mentally disturbed men. But hey, why should battered women get to have their own shelters? Am I right? This cisgendered women's privilege is hateful. But hey, that's pretty much par for the course in today's political jungle. All inequalities are inequities and nothing is anybody's fault. Well, that's not true. White cisgendered heterosexual men, especially if they are conservative and or Christians, those jerks are to blame for everything. Also, white women, when they agree with anything, anyone to the right of Nancy Pelosi is... also part of the patriarchy and is systematically racist, as are, you know, black people. Lots of black people are systematically racist and not really black. I guess they're getting white privilege too. I mean, in case you wonder whether black people can have white privilege and whether that's too ridiculous even for the wokest of the woke to believe, you're wrong, because nothing is too insane for the woke. There are black people who are saying they get white privilege, which is odd, but that's beside the point. The point is that the House bill, which passed, is full of nonsense as the basis of the law, and it doesn't get better. I'd like to quote just a few little subsections from the bill, and then we're going to talk about it and why it's getting so much support from the business community. Okay, so the most obviously stupid and self-contradictory incoherence in this bill is found in Section 9 under Section 1101, Definitions and Rules, B2, and it says, I quote, "With respect to gender identity, an individual shall not be denied access to a shared facility, including a restroom, locker room, and a dressing room, that is in accordance with the individual's gender identity." Let me reread that in case you missed it. With respect to gender identity, an individual shall not be denied access to a shared facility, including a restroom, a locker room, and a dressing room, that is in accordance with the individual's gender identity. That means if you're a boy and you want to go into the girl's shower, have at it, boyo. This, on its face, should have made the bill totally and completely unacceptable. But it didn't, because we live in the stupidest time in history. And while this is what's going to attract the most attention because it's the most obviously egregious, there are other more disturbing aspects of this bill. For instance, the revocation of any protection because of religious beliefs. Look just a little bit below at Section 9, Section 1107, claims, says, and I quote, "The Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993, 42 U.S.C. 2000 BB et sec, that means and et sequentis, which means and the following, it's Latin, shall not provide a claim concerning or a defense to a claim under a covered title or provide a basis for challenging the application or enforcement of a covered title." Let me read that again. "The Religious Freedom Restoration Act of 1993 shall not provide a claim concerning or a defense to a claim under a covered title or provide a basis for challenging the application or enforcement of a covered title." So, just as a for instance, if your church has a men's room and a women's room, you can't keep some pervert from going into the women's room. But again, this is the obvious evil. There's a subtler and more nefarious evil that lurks in the implications, and that is that this bill also revokes the right for employers to not pay for abortions, even if they have religious objections. And what's more, it'll also make way for doctors to not have the right to not perform abortions. And this isn't just cranks like me saying this. There are congressmen saying this. The National Review article says this. A lot of people are saying this. And while these are evil enough, this isn't ideological evil for the sake of ideological evil. Well, not entirely. Because there's a financial side to this that is disturbing to the extreme and should be yet another reason why feminists should be opposing this bill with every ounce of strength they have. In America Magazine, Erica Bakayoki had an extremely insightful piece that sadly was too long and too well written to edit efficiently, and so sadly I couldn't use it as the basis for today's episode. However, it's very worth checking out. I've linked it here so radio listeners can go to lukenagy.com and go to the blog and find the link in the text. But if you're some kind of self-loathing masochist who doesn't want to go to my website and read and listen to all my brilliant and handsome content, you can just search for America Magazine and Equality Act, you know, if you're that kind of person. But anyways, that's enough shameless self-promotion. Erica makes a crucial connection, and one which I think exposes that this bill promotes things more evil than the evil of simply promoting transgenderism. She writes, "Since the High Court has not yet, and is unlikely to, protect abortion rights via the Equal Protection Clause, amending federal sex discrimination law is the next best thing for pro-choice advocates. Thus, the drafters of the Equality Act have written into the bill a new freestanding prohibition on pregnancy discrimination, shorn of the neutral language found in the original PDA, which requires that abortion be treated no differently than other physical conditions. The short section reads, pregnancy, childbirth, or related medical conditions, read abortion, shall not receive less favorable treatment than other related physical conditions. And so, an institution or individual that provides or funds health care but not abortion, including one assumes state governments, would be discriminating on the basis of sex. Catholic doctors and hospitals would have no recourse to federal conscience protections. But requiring abortion to be funded by states and covered by insurers as health care would only further incentivize employers to prefer abortion for their pregnant employees over far more costly accommodations for parenting. Correcting this unyielding logic of the market was the whole purpose of the original PDA. Indeed, even with the PDA in place, pregnancy discrimination is still rampant in the United States, and many women feel the need to hide their pregnancies at work. Clearly, those with caregiving responsibilities are far more costly to their employers than the unencumbered, and big business is increasingly transparent about its economic incentives. As Doreen Denny reported last year, of the 100-plus CEOs who took out a full-page ad in the New York Times standing up for reproductive health care, only two of them are included in the top companies offering paid maternity leave. A 2020 report by Rhea Ventures, Hidden Value, The Business Case for Reproductive Health, recommends covering contraception and abortion as a way for employers to provide high-impact benefit with low-cost investment. And while debating whether an anti-abortion amendment to their state constitution would be voted on in 2022, Kansas Governor Laura Kelly argued that the right to an abortion was an economic development issue. Businesses really look to see what kind of inclusive policies we have in place to make it easier for them to recruit and retain a talented workforce. Clearly, more than anti-discrimination laws needed to support pregnant women and their families today, but the Equality Act takes us in exactly the wrong direction. It may be good for businesses, bottom line, but it would be devastating for women and their families. And Ms. Bakayoki makes here the key and crucial insight that too often people miss, and that's that big business in America is fundamentally pro-abortion. Not pro-choice, but pro-abortion. Because keeping smart, capable, and talented women in their cubicles and out of the home is necessary for the success of their businesses. Not only because of the cost of paying out healthcare expenses for maternity leave is cost prohibitive, but because women are talented and necessary members of the workforce in the current distribution of labor. Abortions are relatively cheap, outpatient procedures that, apart from the moral and emotional damage that is concomitant with murdering your own baby inside of you, ensure that women are able to keep working. Too often, the sheer dollars and cents of baby murder is ignored or is placed in other places. People look at the profiteering of the abortion industry. People talk about the hedonism of women and men who are able to live their dreams because they're unencumbered with the cost and responsibility of caring for or raising a child, or presumably giving him or her up for adoption. But let's not forget the other economic aspect, the incentive for big businesses to disincentivize pregnancy and incentivize abortion. Now, certainly, as I wrote about just the other day in a piece called Call Me Offred, all nations have a deep invested interest in having a large population. So nations that are not overpopulated have a strong incentive to institute pronatalist policies. But businesses can afford to be short-sighted, and in many ways, businesses need to be short-sighted because businesses have to make a profit pretty much every year. Things get dicey. In other words, businesses have a much shorter window and have a lot more hard realities to face. Businesses can't print money. I mean, they can, but it's illegal. Governments can. Businesses have to make a profit. Governments don't. Businesses are answerable to shareholders all the time, and they can go bankrupt and dissolve. Governments tend to not just go bankrupt and dissolve, even if they are bankrupt. The love of money here reasserts itself as the root of all kinds of evil, including promoting abortion in the workplace and working hand in glove with government to keep women chained to their desks while claiming they're shattering the shackles that keep them chained at home. For the first time in a long time, there is an issue where liberal feminists and conservative Christians can take the same policy position for the same reasons. Opposing the Equality Act is one of them. This bill is evil anti-woman, anti-moral, anti-life, and anti-Christian. And as Christians, we need to know about and understand what's happening in our society and how deep the roots of this evil go. And then we need to take action. I hope and pray we will, and I hope you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.